I think there are a few universal complaints that we're used to hearing our whole lives from ourselves or from others. Let's try some out. That's not fair, said every child who receives his or her first punishment, says every kid at the lunch table when they're comparing what they have versus what their friends have, says us when we grow up and look at others around us and compare fates and character, and we think, well, that doesn't match. It's not fair. What about this one? That's not what I meant, said every person who meant exactly that but doesn't like that they got called out for it. Or as we say sometimes when we're in a disagreement and our words get taken the wrong way. But how about this one? You just don't understand me. You just don't understand. We're trying to get a point across, and someone comes at it a different way and doesn't quite catch what we're saying. And it's that need to feel understood and deeply seen, as some people call it. It's what drives me to do something that I don't know why I keep doing. It's foolish, but there's the story in my head that when Aubrey and I are having a disagreement and she's landed somewhere else, it's just because she doesn't really understand what I'm trying to say. And maybe if I would use some more words and keep talking at her, she will come around. It's just because she doesn't understand. You can guess how that works out. Not great. We say it all the time. You just don't understand. The teenager says it to the parent. The patient says it to the doctor. The grieving person says it to a friend. The struggling Christian sometimes might say it to their preacher or their elder. And sometimes we do genuinely care. We just haven't been there. And so our attempts to help will move toward explanation and advice. Here's what you should do. Well, here's what I learned. Here's the silver lining. Here's the lesson. But what people want first, more often, is not advice. They want understanding. They want to feel seen. And that is often a hard place to get to. We all know there's a difference between someone who has studied suffering and someone who has suffered. Today we're wrapping up our series called Gracious and Compassionate, where we have tried to go to Scripture to get insight and answers on some of the big questions the world asks. Like, is empathy just a form of weakness? How do feelings and facts work together when we're deciding how to respond to something? What does true compassion look like? Today we're going to be in the book of Hebrews. And the book of Hebrews was written to Christians who were tired. Following Jesus had become difficult. They were facing pressure and hardship and discouragement. And they were wondering whether holding on was worth it. So all through the book, the writer keeps asking the same question. Why should we keep trusting Jesus? And one of the answers he gives is this. We should keep trusting Jesus because Jesus is not distant from our struggles. He understands them. Hear these words from Hebrews chapter 4, beginning in verse 14. Therefore, since we have a great high priest who has ascended into heaven, Jesus, the Son of God, let us hold firmly to the faith we profess. For we do not have a high priest who is unable to empathize with our weaknesses, but we have one who has been tempted in every way, just as we are, yet he did not sin. So for Israel, the high priest was the representative between God and the people. This person would carry the requests to God and serve as God's spokesperson back down to the people. And Hebrews takes that image and says that Jesus is the true and final high priest, not standing in an earthly temple, but standing in the very presence of God. The key verse is right here in the middle. Jesus is not unable to empathize. Some of your translations will say sympathize. We'll talk about that in a minute. He's not unable to empathize with our weaknesses. He has been tempted in every way we have, and yet did not sin. And I think the surprise of this passage is not just that Jesus resisted temptation. We know that. Christians have always confessed that Jesus was without sin. The surprise isn't that. The surprise is why. Because in Proverbs, other ancient moral teachings, testing proves character, adversity reveals virtue, trials will show you who you are. And in some of these writings, they speak of adversity the way coaches would talk to a team before a big game. Pressure reveals what you're made of. Fire tests gold. Hardship exposes character. And so when they would talk about trials, they saw them as a proving virtue. When they spoke of difficulties, they saw opportunities to display strength. The point was usually admiration. Now, Hebrews agrees that Jesus passed the test, but it asks a different question. What did that testing produce? Sympathy. The testing produced sympathy, and that's unexpected. Jesus wasn't tested merely so we could admire him. He was tested in part so he could understand us. The word behind sympathy here is literally, it's sympatheo. We didn't even translate it. We just kind of made it English. And some of your translations might say empathy. And we often contrast those. And there are some differences. But their mindset would not have seen a huge difference. What we know is that this is not just Hallmark card kind of sympathy. It's not detached pity. It's definitely not thoughts and prayers. It's fellow feeling. Feeling with. It's sharing in, entering into, suffering with. It is stronger than our modern use of the word sympathy. Jesus doesn't just know about weakness. He knows weakness from the inside. The passage talks about Jesus understanding our weaknesses. Now, weakness can first of all and most obviously mean temptation. That's one of the ways the writer here uses it. He certainly has in mind the temptations of Jesus in the wilderness after Jesus' baptism. And in each instance of that temptation, Satan appealed to some human weakness, hunger, power, recognition. And each time Jesus resisted. But sometimes we read the gospel accounts and we think it was a quick and easy exercise for Jesus. Hear temptation, turn it down, quote scripture, move on to the next one. But we know it wasn't like that. There's no point in tempting someone multiple times if it's just open and shut for them to turn it down. So temptations to sin can certainly appeal to our weakness. And so that's top of the list here. But the way this worldview uses the word weakness is much broader than temptation and sin. When Jesus knows our weaknesses, he also understands weaknesses like physical weakness and emotional weakness, fear, fatigue, vulnerability, confusion, limitation, illness, grief, and all of the human condition. Hebrews presents Jesus entering fully into the human existence. Ambiguity, vulnerability, suffering, testing. He did all that without surrendering his calling. Jesus is able to sympathize because he's been there. And when you're tempted to think no one understands, Brothers and sisters, if anyone else does, Jesus does. Jesus knows what it's like to stand outside the tomb of someone he loves and feel grief rising in his own chest. And he knows what it's like to weep when death has done its work. Jesus knows what it's like to stay awake long after everyone else has fallen asleep, carrying a burden so heavy that he just falls to the ground in prayer. He knows what it's like to plead with God for another way and still have to walk the road set before him. Jesus knows what it's like to feel exhausted. So exhausted that you fall asleep in a fishing boat while a storm rages around you. He knows what it's like to be hungry, 40 days in the wilderness, feeling weak and empty and vulnerable. Jesus knows what it's like to feel misunderstood, to have people hear your words and completely miss your heart, to be accused of things you never did, to watch rumors spread way faster than truth. Jesus knows what it's like to have friends disappoint you, to look around a table and realize everyone is going to turn on you, betray you, deny you, run away. Jesus knows what it's like to feel rejected by people that you're trying to help. Jesus knows what it's like to feel alone. Jesus knows what it's like to hurt. And before any of us says, well, yes, but Jesus was God, so it's different. Remember what Hebrews is insisting on. The point is not that Jesus appeared to be human. The point is that he entered fully into human life, into weakness and vulnerability and suffering and testing. Not way off from a distance, but from the inside. So when you tell Jesus about your grief and your fear and your temptation or exhaustion or disappointment, you are not explaining something foreign to him. You are describing territory he has already walked. I want you to picture yourself sitting across the table from Jesus, and you're in a room by yourself, and he's giving you his full attention. And you look at him and you tell him about the thing that is just eating your lunch. The thing that you can't tell anyone else because they might not understand. The thing that you're ashamed of. The thing that's got you worried. The thing that's got you embarrassed. And you tell him that. And he looks right at you and he puts his hand on your shoulder and he looks you in the eyes and he says, I understand. And for once, no one in that room doubts it. We've spent weeks talking about mercy and compassion and sympathy. And sometimes Christians can act like sympathy is a weak virtue, a soft virtue, something just sentimental. Hebrews doesn't. Hebrews presents sympathy as a divine virtue. The Son of God is not diminished by his ability to sympathize. He is glorified by it. We all know there's a difference between someone who has studied suffering and someone who has suffered. And we all know which we prefer. Now, I want you to watch a very quick clip of two colleagues where one who's been there is helping another who hasn't. This is from my favorite show. Watch this clip.
This guy's walking down the street when he falls in the hall. The walls are so steep he can't get out. A doctor passes by and the guy shouts up, hey, you, can you help me out? The doctor writes a prescription, throws it down in the hall and moves on. Then a priest comes along and the guy shouts up, Father, I'm down in this hole, can you help me out? The priest writes out a prayer, throws it down in the hall and moves on. Then a friend walks by. Hey, Joe, it's me, can you help me out? And the friend jumps in the hole. Our guy says, now we're both down here. The friend says, yeah, but I've been down here before and I know the way out. Long as I got a job, you got a job, you understand?
That scene resonates because all of us know the difference between expertise and experience. Jesus has been down in the hole. But unlike everyone else, he didn't stay there. And now he stands at the throne of grace. And because he understands weakness from the inside, listen to this invitation from the book of Hebrews. Let us then approach God's throne of grace with confidence, so that we may receive mercy and find grace to help us in our time of need. The goal is not just for us to leave this room thinking, isn't Jesus wonderful? The goal is that tonight, or the next night, or next week, whenever the worry returns, or the loneliness returns, or the grief returns, that you go to him. Because the one standing on the throne has walked where you have walked. He has felt what you have felt. And that is why it is called a throne of grace. Let's stand and sing.